VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, what's taking place at our southern border is overwhelming. This past weekend, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, he was on CBS's Face the Nation. He stated that if the illegal border crossings continue at the current pace, there will be 800,000 illegals crossing the border in 1 year. Now, just a couple months ago, the former Department of Homeland Security head, Kirstjen Nielsen, she told the House Homeland Security Committee that we're on pace to encounter close to 1 million illegal aliens at our southern border this year. And at the same time, we have former CIA Director John Brennan, there's James Clapper, John Kerry, Susan Rice, Samantha Power, Janet Napolitano, Leon Panetta, many other former officials all arguing that the border crisis is a non-existent threat. They've called it a manufactured crisis that rests on falsehoods and fear-mongering. We're here to address what's happening at the border, along with comment on a new proposal from the White House. We welcome back Mark Krikorian. He's a nationally recognized expert on immigration issues. He serves as the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. They're an independent, nonpartisan research organization that examines and critiques the impact of immigration on the United States. He has testified numerous times before Congress. He's published articles in many outlets. Recent visit as well to our southern border. Mark, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So as we close off this month of May, paint for us a picture as to what's happening at our southern border. I mean, the numbers that we heard from Senator Johnson, former Homeland Security head Kirstjen Nielsen, we heard that, and yet we have others who are saying, hey, no big deal, no crisis, only fear-mongering. Mark, what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, Senator Johnson's correct. Our control over our border with Mexico is disintegrating. I mean, I don't think that's an exaggeration. And what's happening is that we're getting something like 100,000 people a month now. That's where it's reached, roughly. It may even be more than that in May. We don't have the final numbers, obviously, yet. Are coming up almost all from Central America. These are not Mexican illegals anymore. I mean, there's some of that, but it's mainly Central Americans. And what they're doing is they're coming, bringing kids with them, because they know that if they turn themselves into the Border Patrol, because that's what they're doing, they're not trying to avoid the Border Patrol, they're stepping across the border, turning themselves in, and saying, look, I have a kid here, and I'm requesting asylum. Part of our refugee law is that if you get into the U.S., you can ask to be considered a refugee, and that's what asylum is. And very few of them end up actually getting it once they go through the whole court process,
mm-hmm.
but they don't care about that, because the point is they pass the first cut for asylum. Basically, it's called the credible fear interview. In other words, to see, basically, are they crazy or not? You know, do they think Mickey Mouse is talking to them through their dental work, that kind of stuff. Otherwise, if not, they pretty much get sent on into the interior of the country, and if they have a kid with them, they can't be detained for more than 20 days, according to our rules, and they're home free. They get work permits, and if 3 years down the road they are turned down for asylum, then what? We don't go and look for them and send them back, so really, if you step across the border, especially if you have a kid with you, and you say the words, I fear persecution, or I fear being sent to my back home, they've all been coached on what to say and how to say it, you're in the United States basically for good.
Hmm.
And so I'm surprised it's only 100,000 people a year, I mean a month, rather. This is going to keep sort of gaining momentum until the Congress plugs these loopholes that are making this possible. There are still some things the administration can do to try to respond to this, and it might help a little bit, maybe, if the judges don't stop them in, court cases.
Right.
But ultimately, Congress needs to plug these loopholes, because until they do that, we essentially do not have a border with the rest of the world. And it's not even just the Mexican border. That's mainly where it is. But I've been to, this was last year, we went and visited in Pennsylvania a family detention center, because they don't put people with kids, obviously, in the same place as a whole bunch of young single men. They have a separate one for families. And there were Europeans there, Romanians especially, gypsies from Romania, because you can now get into Canada easy from Romania, and they've gotten word, the smugglers have said, look, if you just step across the border into the U.S. from Canada, you have this kid with you, you say you've been persecuted, you're basically home free. And we have no border at all, basically, with Canada, and that's okay if nobody's trying to get across. I mean, I've been to the Canadian border. There are places where we have a guardrail. Literally, it's a guardrail and a sign that says, do not enter.
Mm-hmm.
So the Romanians just step over the guardrail, and they turn themselves into the Border Patrol. So this is, I mean, this is mainly a Central American thing, but the longer it continues, the more the word is going to get out that this is a way of getting into the U.S. It's a golden ticket, and we're not going to be looking for you, even if you don't even bother to apply for asylum, or even if you show up for your hearings but then are turned down at the end, as almost all are, you're still not going to be made to leave. We're not going to track you down, arrest you, and send you back to your home country. So why wouldn't they come? Like I said, I'm surprised it already isn't more than 100,000 a month.
But is that the very reason why we're seeing the surge take place?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it. Because the people that you mentioned who were saying this is all a fake crisis and all that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's complete. I mean, they're just, I mean, honestly, I don't mean to be partisan, but they're Democrats who hate the president. And so if the president said the sky is blue, they'll say, no, it's not blue. I mean, it's that deranged on their part. The one kernel of truth, the one number that they always cling to, is that there have been a couple of years in the past, 15-plus years ago, where the number of Border Patrol arrests briefly were as high or even a little higher than we're likely to see this year. So first of all, that was the worst ever. So to say that we're not quite at the worst ever is hardly comforting. That's number one. And number two, back in the, 15, 20 years ago, they were arresting the same Mexican single men trying to get across several times until they finally made it across. Well, every one of those arrests counts as a separate statistic. So it wasn't, say, 1.2 million people. I forget which year. It was something about that. It wasn't 1.2 million people. It was far fewer than that. They just kept trying over and over again. Well, now the Central American families only come across once because they're not trying to avoid the Border Patrol. They literally are brought to the border by the smugglers, and it's cheaper if the smugglers don't have to take them into the U.S.
Mm.
So it saves them money. They step across the border, and there's lots of the border that either has no barriers at all or just has short barriers that are designed to prevent trucks from driving over, not people. You can just scoot over it or scoot under it. It's very easy. I've done it myself. And they turn themselves into the Border Patrol, so they only get arrested once, so that if we end up with 1 million apprehensions this year, 1 million arrests, which is a guess, but it could be, that's actually be close to 1 million actual individual separate people who are let go into the United States, because not only do they flag down the Border Patrol and turn themselves in, there was a story from New Mexico, a remote part of the border, where a whole group was brought by smugglers to the border. They scooted under the little fence there or passed the kids over it, whatever it was. They were looking for the Border Patrol. They couldn't find them because there's so few agents there. They ended up having to go to the Border Patrol office and knock on the door to turn themselves in.
Oh.
So my point is the 1 million people who get arrested this year actually amounts to far more people than, say, 1 million arrests from 15 years ago, mm-hmm. which might have been half that number of people, actual separate people.
So the children seem to be the ticket in just to be released. I mean, we've heard the term rent-a-kid. Is that really occurring? Is there any evidence for that?
Yeah, there is. We just posted a piece on our website, cis.org, where one of our guys, he writes on security and smuggling issues, he interviewed a person in one of the guys in Texas who's involved in this, what they call faux families, you know, fake families.
Mm-hmm.
She said, the person he interviewed, said that one of the things that stories that out there that she has not seen is recycling of kids, because there's been fear that kids are being used to as an entry into the U.S., and then they send the kid back to basically be a golden ticket for the next person. She says that could be happening. She hasn't seen it. What she has seen, though, is what you were talking about, which is renting kids, where a parent will bring a kid. They're in the, it's all part of the deal with the smuggler. They come in the bus up to the border with the kid together. Then they have with them, or the smuggler has, fake birth certificate information, and they get paid or get a discount from smuggling to let that kid go with someone else and pretend to be that person's kid.
Wow.
So that he can then be released into the country. She said that only a few years ago you never saw a single adult man with a kid with him. Never. She said now it's an enormous percentage of the illegal flow, of the arrests, are single men. Some of them, it's no doubt their kid, maybe a nephew even, but often it's people that they're not even related to.
So we got
and you may not see that kid. If you're the parent, you may not see the kid for weeks afterwards. How do you know what happened to the kid? It's just, it's appalling that
so
people do this.
That gives credence to what we now call fake families.
Absolutely. No, there's no question that there's fake families. Now, the Border Patrol actually pulled out a group of people and then did quick DNA tests, and they found that 30% of the people they did tests on were not related. No, were not the kids they had with them were not their kids. Now, we don't know if that's a representative sample because they didn't check everybody. They pulled out a bunch of people and tested them. But it's clearly a significant issue. And how could it not be? I mean, really, mm-hmm. if our ridiculous loophole-ridden immigration laws make bringing a minor with you, or somebody pretending to be a minor, because sometimes they're 18 or over and they just look younger, if that is a golden ticket to release and essentially permanent residence, even if it's illegal, in the U.S., of course there are going to be people doing it. And it's, you know, I mean, this is bad for our sovereignty and our control over our border, but it's also really pretty bad for these kids, because at the very least, they're terrified by being separated from their parents for a long period of time. And that's the best scenario. I mean, just, you know, you can just use your imagination to imagine what happens to some of these kids who are handed over to single men whom they don't know.
Yeah.
And the parent has no way, has to sort of wait for the, you know, to sort of wait for the call that they can go and get their kid.
Sex trafficking all a part of it?
It must be. We haven't looked into that in any detail, but there's no way it can't be. And in fact, there have been part of this flow is not just parents, it's families with kids or adults with kids. It's also so-called unaccompanied minors, most of whom are teenagers, and they're not really unaccompanied. They're brought to the border by a smuggler. Some of those people have been used for various nefarious purposes. We know that.
Mark Krikorian is our guest today from the Director, he's director of the Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org, CIS.org. More on the border after the break, as well as the President's immigration plan. Back in just 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, today's a heavy topic. Is there a scientific explanation for suicide bombers?
Chris, our world today is on edge because of a suicidal terrorist. Since evolution claims to be a theory of everything, there must be an evolutionary explanation for even this self-destructive behavior. And sure enough, some evolutionists are now saying that suicidal tendencies are a variation of an evolutionary adaptation that was previously useful in some evolutionary sense. Creationists just stand back and wonder how they can be so misguided, so deceived. The Bible says that man was created initially in a very good state, in the image of God. Yet when Adam rebelled against God's order, creation was permanently distorted, and now we live in a world dominated by sin's ruinous effects. Chris, so you see, what began back in Genesis continues today, even with suicidal bombers.
Thanks, Dr. Morris.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're talking about the border crisis, giving an update on it, the new immigration plan that's being proposed. We're talking with Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of Center for Immigration Studies, their website cis.org, and there you'll find many articles keeping you informed on matters pertaining to the border and immigration as a whole, cis.org. Mark, as you know, the media, certain members of Congress, very quick to pounce on the Trump immigration policies when another illegal immigrant passed away recently with a medical crisis. So if you would help us understand what we are doing on this issue, what our Border Patrol agents are confronted with, what they have to contend with as it relates to the medical needs of those who are crossing the border illegally.
The families that are coming across have kids with them. They have been schlepping these kids, their own kids usually, across 1,000 or 2,000 miles of Mexico. Some of them get sick. Kids get sick. I have kids. You know, that happens. Well, the Border Patrol ends up spending something like 40% of its entire resources on dealing with these family units and kids. I mean, they're shuffling people to hospital. They're delivering diapers to them and water. And, I mean, they have turned into a kind of a daycare agency rather than a border control agency. And in some cases, several kids have died in border patrol custody, or the border patrol takes them to the hospital and they die there. And like you said, these usual suspects jump all over them and say, evil orange man is killing migrant babies. You know, and in fact, there was a congresswoman who last week actually said that I think that these deaths are intentionally committed by the Trump administration, that they are intentionally killing these children. It is outrageous. I mean, the woman should be censured in Congress, in my opinion. I think there has been some pushback, that was too much even for a lot of the Democrats in the House. But the fact is, the Border Patrol goes to extraordinary lengths to take care of these kids. I mean, they've got kids themselves. They're just people like anybody else. A third of them, at least, are Mexican-American, so it's not even like they're some kind of aliens. And all of them know Spanish, because that's a requirement of being in the Border Patrol. And so if some dad, especially, drags his little kid across 2,000 miles of Mexico, the kid's got a fever or some kind of hacking cough, what have you, and they just, he just keeps going because he's got to use the kid as his ticket into the United States, and then the kid dies, that's somehow the Border Patrol's fault? I mean, these parents need to be held accountable for what can only be described as child abuse, because that's what they're committing. This isn't the Border Patrol's problem. The Border Patrol has turned into a Coast Guard on dry land. They've always been that to some degree, but that's now mainly what they're doing, is basically search and rescue rather than actually patrolling and protecting the borders of the United States.
As you know, President Trump, he has recently given this new roadmap on this issue of dealing with immigration, and we've heard the term merit coming through this proposal. Describe for us, what is this roadmap?
Yeah, this is a proposal they're putting together. The president announced it earlier this month, but it's not like fully cooked and all written up yet. Supposedly in June is when they're going to release it as a bill. And it has two parts. One is illegal immigration, and that addresses a lot of these loopholes that I've been talking about. And that's all, and there's a lot of, we haven't seen all the details yet, but there's a lot of essential, long overdue changes in there. It's all to the good. The other part is on legal immigration, and that's like you said about this idea of merit-based immigration. So what they want to do is keep the level of immigration the same, which I have problems with, but change the way we pick people. Because now, two-thirds of all legal immigrants get their green cards. In other words, that's their right to permanent residence. They get their green cards based on who they're related to. So it's a kind of who you know, not what you know immigration policy. And so what the White House is going to be proposing is shifting it so that if your spouses are minor children, then you would still have immigration rights. In other words, it's not like it would end family immigration. It would just tighten the focus to spouses and minor children, not adult relatives who have their own families. And it would then move all of those green cards, all of those immigration numbers, over to a new merit-based system, which would apparently be based on something like the way Canada and Australia do it, so that you would get a certain number of points for different characteristics. You know, if you had a college degree, you get X number of points. If you got a PhD, you get more points. If you're, you know, of prime working age, that kind of thing. In other words, they would assess different things, and people who made the cut, who had enough points, would then be the ones picked for immigration. So it's a much more sensible system than we have now. My concern is that it doesn't acknowledge that immigration is too high. And I'm not asking for everything. I mean, the reductions in immigration I want would be pretty significant, but it doesn't even cut immigration 5%. Just to, you know, to send the message that even apart from the low unemployment rate, for instance, that we have, there are still problems with high levels of immigration for assimilation and security and other measures. And so the fact that it doesn't have even a token or symbolic reduction in overall legal immigration from the current level of 1.1 million each year is the one big sticking point, at least as far as I see it.
Now, also in response to this, yesterday, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, she was questioning the merit of the immigration of First Lady Melania Trump's parents on this issue. And then she said what President Trump, when he uses a word merit, it's actually code for make America white again. What's your response to that? Is she just fanning the flames here?
Yeah, of course she is. I mean, it's just the usual Democrat line. I mean, again, I hate to be partisan about it, but it's just tedious and ridiculous. Because, first of all, just as a practical matter, if you keep the level of immigration the same, but change it the way they're talking about, what you're going to end up with is immigration, an immigration flow that's somewhat less Hispanic than it is now, not because there's no Hispanics without college degrees, it's just that the people who have networks and connections here are more likely to be lower-skilled people, because that's what the earlier immigration was. And it's going to be more Asian. In other words, immigration will shift to be less Latin American and more from India and China and maybe the Middle East. Whether you like that, don't like it, I don't know, but it has nothing to do with making America white again. I mean, this is just a ridiculous talking point from the other side that just defies the actual facts. And as far as the president's in-laws, you know, the first lady's parents coming in, and they did come in as parents of a U.S. citizen because she's a naturalized citizen. I want to get rid of that category. It's not clear what the White House proposal is going to do about parents of U.S. citizens. I've asked and I've gotten conflicting answers. They haven't decided yet. But let's say that the proposal says no more parents of U.S. citizens, no green cards. What does that have to do with people who came in before? In other words, people who fair and square came in on an existing immigration category, one that I think maybe is a mistake. For instance, there's something called the visa lottery. We give 50,000 green cards each year, essentially at random, to people around the world. It's a ridiculous policy. But if somebody got here through that program, they followed the rules, they got here fair and square, there was no fraud or anything, well, then they're here. I mean, that's not that, you know, they could be great, they could be bad. It doesn't have anything to do with what the program should be next year. And it's the same thing with the First Lady's parents. They followed the rules and were able to come in legally under the system we have now. We need to change that system, in my opinion, but that has no bearing on the people who already used the system that existed in the past, fair and square. They didn't pull anything over on us. They used, you know, we had the system, they took advantage of it. More power to them and more power to any other legal immigrant. I just think that for tomorrow, we need to change the system. I mean, just one last point on this. Immigration is a federal program. And, you know, we have farm subsidies, for instance. I think those are probably badly conceived and too large, and maybe we should get rid of them altogether. But farmers who collected farm subsidies, you know, last year or 5 years ago, as long as they did it legally, they're not bad guys. They just follow the rules. The question is, what should the rules be tomorrow?
Yeah. One of the things I was reading here, it's being reported that thousands of older Mexicans are being granted travel visas to visit illegal alien family members in the U.S. Is that for real?
I actually hadn't heard that story, but yeah, I'm sure I have no doubt that it's real.
Right.
Actually, it seems perfectly plausible to me. And, you know, do you think a lot of those people are going to go back? I mean, that's one of the issues. Some of them might. But this is one of the real problems with an immigration flow. I'm not talking about visitors here, but legal immigrants who are increasingly represented among old people. In other words, the percentage of elderly people among legal immigration flow is going up and up and up. We have a report that's going to be coming out on that next month, probably. And, you know, they're less likely to work, more likely to need medical care, and if they can't afford it, what are we going to do? Scoop them up and dump them on the other side of the border instead of, you know, if they show up at the emergency room? Of course not. We're going to end up on the hook for it. So, you know, an immigration flow that is increasingly made up of elderly people is not sustainable. It's going to end up costing an enormous amount of money.
Well, tell us the status of this wall. I mean, we had the big controversy in the emergency funding issue. We also have this private group, We Build the Wall, who said they've, you know, finished construction on a segment of the border wall in New Mexico. We understand that's being challenged right now. What's the status of the wall?
We have altogether something like 700 miles of some kind of barrier on our almost 2,000-mile border. So it's about a third of the border has something, some kind of barriers. Of those barriers, about half of them are what I called, what I described earlier, vehicle barriers. In other words, they're 3-4 feet high, and they're just to keep trucks from driving over. The other half, roughly speaking, so 300 miles or so, are what are called pedestrian fences. In other words, tall fences designed to keep people from crossing. And they're not perfect, but they do help the Border Patrol. They especially in built-up areas, they really want that. What they're doing with the money that they got with this emergency declaration, they essentially got Department of Defense money they were able to shift over to this, is they're building some limited amount of new fencing where there's no fencing at all. But much of it is converting these little Mickey Mouse 3-foot fences to real fences that you can't just hop over.
Mm-hmm.
And no question that's a move forward. This private company, or it's not a company, it's a nonprofit. A lot of people donated to it. There were reports that it was all a scam or something. It wasn't. They had real people involved. And so what we found out is that they actually have completed some section. They plugged a section of the border between the Rio Grande and in New Mexico where it was open. And it's on private land, so they built a fence, and much cheaper than the government was talking about. They did it pretty quickly. The same kind of, same design as what the government has. The local Democratic city officials tried to stop them, but they've backtracked on that, so they're going forward.
Wow. Let's take a quick break, and folks, right after the break, we want to find out what is the path forward through the eyes of Center for Immigration Studies. What's the path forward here on the immigration issue? Back in just 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Evolution as an idea is considered a rock-solid truth among secular scientists. But when you begin looking at the evidence and asking simple questions, you find their conclusions to be just fragile assumptions, unproven myth, and outright misconceptions. Like a glass house on shifting sands. In the book Glass House, general editors Ken Ham and Bodie Hodge, along with a team of credentialed scientists, researchers, and biblical apologists, take on the pillars of evolution. The truths they reveal decimate Darwin's beliefs using a biblical and logical approach to evidence. Learn what science is and how science is actually devastating to evolution. You'll also learn how evolution developed from unproven science to a popular and cultural worldview. Copies of Glass House are available for a donation of $16 or more to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829. We'll be right back.
Mark Krikorian is with the Center for Immigration Studies. Their website is cis.org, standing for Center for Immigration Studies, cis.org. You'll find a lot of information there. They regularly are updating it and commenting on issues that are going on and making you aware of, it'll be a different take than what you get from your nightly news. Mark, just before we look at the path forward here, I saw this other article about the governor of New Mexico having issues now. First, she pulled the National Guard from the border, now begging for help to deal with the illegals in New Mexico. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like when the president said, why don't I send all of these people to the sanctuary cities?
Right.
And it's the same idea. You know, they're saying Border Patrol is evil. They have to let all of these people in. And it's like, okay, well, here, how many do you want? It brings to mind a story from the late 1970s when President Jimmy Carter was meeting in China with Deng Xiaoping, who was the new ruler in China. And Jimmy Carter was saying, you know, your country's communist rules about not letting people emigrate, they're really bad, and you shouldn't have that. And so Deng Xiaoping says, okay, how many people do you want? 10 million? 20 million? 30 million? We got plenty of them. That shut Jimmy Carter up pretty quickly, and, we're seeing the same kind of thing here. The governor of New Mexico doesn't want her National Guard to be, helping the Border Patrol. They're not arresting anybody. National Guard can't do that. They do support-type stuff, driving the bus, providing the, meals and changing diapers sometimes. You know, it's that sort of thing. She doesn't want to do that, but she also, was worried about too many illegal immigrants burdening her state. Well, you got to pick and choose. Which do you want?
One other issue here, and that is, as we take a look at this whole policy of what's happening at the borders and response to it, we have the Trump plan soon to come out in this regard. Through the eyes of your organization, Center for Immigration Studies, what do you see as being the path forward to have sensible immigration policies for our nation?
First thing we need to do is deal with the emergency at the border, and it really is an emergency. I mean, we are seeing a kind of slow motion disaster of the kind that Europe saw a few years ago when more than a million people just swarmed into the country, into the continent, because the German prime minister said, come on in, everybody. We welcome you. It's like, again, Jimmy Carter saying to Castro that, he could he would want to take anybody from Cuba, and 110,000 people showed up in like a week. And they had to shut that down. So first thing we have to do is get control of the emergency at the border, and that is plugging these loopholes, using asylum as a strategy for illegally immigrating and living in the United States has to stop. And there are legal changes there. We need to raise the bar for being allowed to apply for asylum. There's talk that they're going to try to announce something soon where if you pass through another country where you could have applied for asylum, you're not allowed to apply here. That's a hard thing to do. You got to negotiate with the other country, with Mexico in this sense. But the point is, that's the first thing that has to happen. We got to get control over the border itself, and it is out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Then on legal immigration, which is the actual substance of immigration policy, I mean, in a sense, illegal immigration should be zero. The question is, who are we taking legally, and how many, and how do we pick them? That's a whole other show, obviously, but my basic take on it is that a modern society like ours, mass immigration is not suitable. And so what we need to do is not have zero immigration, but start at zero, zero-based budgeting, and then look at which narrow, tightly defined categories of people are so important to let in, we let them in anyway, which is, in my opinion, husbands, wives, and little kids of American citizens, real Einsteins. I don't mean, middle class, reasonably educated college grads. I mean Einsteins. And then some number of humanitarian immigrants. And like I said, that's a whole other show too, but refugee resettlement, where we bring people from other countries as refugees, I believe to be morally wrong. It is a kind of virtue signaling because it is so much more expensive to bring somebody here than to take care of them there What we are doing, it's 12 times more expensive according to our research.
Wow.
What we're doing is bringing one person here instead of helping 12 people in a refugee camp somewhere. And that's wrong. I mean, that is morally wrong. This is like the Pharisee in the temple where the tax collector is debasing himself and the Pharisee is there saying, thank you, God, for making me the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Mm-hmm.
Our refugee policy is the Pharisee saying, look at how great I am. I'm bringing in refugees. I'm not like those evil Trump people.
Mark Krikorian is our guest today. Our phone lines are open at 800-733-9829. Your question, a brief comment, 1-800-733-9829. Mark, in all reality, when you talk about this path forward, is there any workable solution that you foresee where the right side of the aisle is going to work with the left side, vice versa, on this issue?
No time soon. No, I'm afraid not. And that's not permanent. Things always change in politics. But, you know, certainly for this year and next year, there's no chance whatsoever that the Democrats will entertain any immigration changes that the Republicans would accept. Because the Democrats have basically adopted, and they've been pretty open about this, a policy that anyone who makes it into the United States has to be allowed to stay unless they kill somebody. So that's not open borders in the literal sense, because they still want to technically have a border patrol, but they see the role of the border patrol is as a kind of welcome wagon, so that anyone who can step into the United States, they get one foot across the goal line, they get to stay forever, regardless of whether they've broke all the rules, as long as they don't actually get convicted of killing somebody. And that is... I don't even know if radical is the right word for it. It's unlimited immigration. That's not sustainable. They're not going to be able to keep that position up without being forced to change. The question is, how long is it going to take for them to get the 2x4 across the side of their heads politically before they change on that? And I don't know. It's going to be, you're going to have to see something like you're seeing in Europe, where there's a real pushback.
Yeah.
And the parties, the center-left parties, are getting wiped out politically. That's what it's going to take, and that's going to happen, I think, at some point, but it's not going to be this year or next year.
Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Let's begin in Olney, Illinois. George, you're on the air.
Yes, I was going to ask your guest about the word Einstein. Are we talking Jewish? Or are we talking German? Or are we talking just very smart?
Now, I'm using that as a shorthand for the top talents in the field in the world. In other words, the top rocket scientists, the top whatever, that kind of thing. In other words, the best and brightest is another way of putting it. The problem is that the lobbyists for these tech companies keep saying, well, look, we have all of these best and brightest coming in, and we need more. Well, some of the people who come in now as immigrants because of their skills really are top talents in the world. There's no question about it. But most of them really aren't. They're kind of average talents, average skills. And so my point is, as far as picking people for skills, we need to pick the top people in the world and only them. And frankly, humanity doesn't produce that many Einsteins every year. The whole point is that they're exceptional. They're geniuses. We take 140,000 people a year now under our skilled immigration categories. Humanity doesn't create 140,000 geniuses a year. It just doesn't work that way.
George, go ahead.
I was just going to say that Einstein lived from a conceived child to an old man, and there was points and times in his life that he was a disappointment to most people. Who would have said, I don't think so.
Yeah, but I mean, that's sort of one of those urban myths. You know, people say, well, he failed French in fourth grade or something. Einstein was a genius. Everybody knew Einstein was a genius from the beginning. This wasn't something where he was, you know, everybody was saying, well, this kid's going to be a failure, and then he ends up, you know, discovering the theory of relativity. Everybody knew he was a genius all along.
George, thanks for the call. Let's go to Blanche next in Ohio. Blanche, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question I'd like to ask. I heard on your program the other day about these places where they got these kids in school and they're teaching them to kill the infidels and kill the West people here. Why are these people being allowed to do that? Why are they not being charged with treason and being taken out of these schools where they're teaching that and deported? Because that is treason against our country. They're teaching them to kill us, cut our heads off, and everything.
Okay, you're referring to some of the teachings going on at some of the Islamic centers across the U.S. That's another whole issue as well here, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an immigration issue strictly, but obviously it's related to immigration. I mean, the immigration angle of that is something this administration actually has talked about, which is have some kind of way where we attempt to screen out people who want to move here, to screen out people who reject basic American values. In other words, you wouldn't have to say, it's not like you wouldn't get a green card unless you knew that James Madison was the father of the Constitution. It's more, do you believe that someone who changes his religion should be put to death? Yes or no? If your answer is yes, then we don't want you here.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing, now people will lie and all that, but I think that something like that, where we send a very lowest common denominator benchmark, do you believe in freedom of speech? Do you think women should be killed if they... cheat on their husbands or something like this. And, if you're answering yes to any of those, it's like, sorry, try Australia. We don't want you.
Thank you, Blanche. Victoria is next. Kenosha, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm kind of concerned. I see a lot of increase in Muslim people, and they don't have jobs. They have a Muslim mosque 2 miles from where we live, and none of them have jobs. They are always meeting on a Friday. And then we go to Illinois, and there's expensive houses that are just astronomical, $500,000-$600,000.
Yeah.
You have a lot of Muslims and Pakistanis and people from India, foreigners, that have these expensive houses. And even the real estate agent, you think, I don't know how they afford them.
Okay, and again, dealing with the immigration issue, I know I don't want to go too far afoul from our topic here today.
Sure.
But I know that's certainly a concern. And as to the Fridays, yes, that would be the time in which they assemble for their meetings as well. But I think that our guest addressed that with the previous caller here, just in regard to some of the safeguards that the president has been seeking to put in place. And actually, we have seen, Mark, where the courts have upheld, bans on immigration from certain nations.
Yeah, I mean, the president has, in law, the right to keep any person or any class of persons out of the United States for any reason he wants. The very fact that those court cases you talked about even happened is outrageous, because the legal authority is unequivocal. Let me just make one quick point on Muslim immigration, a positive point, because I understand, there's no question that it's a challenge for a mostly Christian society with a secular government in dealing with people from Muslims from the Middle East. I mean, that's just a truism. But the problem we face is actually much less than the problem the Europeans face, because we have fewer Muslim immigrants. They're much more diverse. They're all from different countries. They all hate each other. They all start their own mosques. So it's not like there's one big group. And they're mostly better off. So, the problems we face are a lot less than the problems Europe is facing.
Thank you for the call. We'll be back in 1 minute and taking more of your calls here on Crosstalk. Our guest, Mark Krikorian, his website, cis.org. Back in 1 minute.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Well, the Islamists are taking over Minnesota and Michigan, and they're working on other states. But who's to blame? Ultimately, it's the Marxist. Marxism is at the center of almost everything America is dealing with. I tried warning about this in my first books back in 1993 and 1995. 14 books later, and many years later, my last book was Marxianity. And who is helping? The Islamists and the Marxist? Evangelicals. That's why I call the book Marxianity. So, what happened in Minnesota? Well, a congressman there by the name of Keith Ellison, he ran for office and swore his oath on the Quran, not the Bible. Then he became the Attorney General of Minnesota. And now Ilhan Omar is the U.S. Congresswoman for that district in Minnesota, and she's making anti-Semitic remarks. Over in Michigan, they're doing the same thing. They're taking over. But who's to blame? The Marxist. Without the Marxist, the Islamists would not be getting the upper hand on America.
Well, talking about the crisis at the border today, as well as the new immigration plan, and taking your phone calls here at Crosstalk. Lines are all filled up. Let's go right to them. Glenn is calling in from Duluth, Minnesota. Glenn, you're on the air.
I'll make it really quick. Great show. I Germany many years before I came here, and I've since moved back. But I talked to my friends also that are talking about how out of hand it has gotten as far as no-go zones. My question is, do you think the Democrats have even seen the beginning of what they have done as far as letting in people from the Mexican border? And that's my question.
Well, in other words, was this like a plan, a strategy? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think the Democrats thought this through and said, okay, this is a way for us to import voters or anything like that. I think it's they just can't rouse themselves to defend their own countries and say their own country and say no to anybody, because what they see with these Central Americans coming across the border from Mexico is they see people that they want to help. In other words, that's I think the way they see it. They see immigration as a kind of philanthropy, or it's taxpayer-funded good works rather than using their own funds for good works.
Mark, at the same time, though, I mean, we have seen moves to have illegals be able to vote in local elections, not necessarily in state or federal elections, but it seems like the camel's nose is getting in the tent here.
Oh, yeah, I don't dispute that. I'm just saying that, I mean, and there have been Democrats who have been kind of open about it. I'm just saying that's not the main point. I mean, remember Barney Frank? He was a congressman years ago, and frankly, he was one of the smarter guys in Congress. And he actually had said at one point when he was asked about this, he said it in print. He said, of course immigration is bad for blue-collar American workers, but it will help the Democrats eventually take over Congress where they can pass bills to try to help blue-collar workers and you know, soften the blow that immigration. So, I mean, he was kind of upfront about it. He was quite honest. But that's, you know, I mean, that the Democrats won't even acknowledge that it's bad for blue-collar workers, and yet they're supposed to be the party of the working man.
We've got another caller from Minnesota. That's Sharon, who is calling. Hi, Sharon, you're on the air. Sharon, go ahead, please. Okay, let's go to Paul, who's calling from Rochester. Paul, you're on the air. Okay, Paul left us. Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee. Mike, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. Just like to say I talked across today verbally with this man of Spanish descent, and at a restaurant, a man named Cirillo went back to Mexico when he came back, and he goes, first thing he said is, mi familia gracias for Biblia Espanol. Went to two bookstores, one evangelical, I had to get at the Catholic bookstore. So God bless you. Thanks for keeping the cross and God's will central. God bless you.
Thank you, Mike. Brad in West Dallas, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. I got to disagree with your guest a little bit there when he said that's not what the Democrats thought up that they would like to see happen. I think it is. I remember when this happened when Obama was in office. It was a smaller wave, and it didn't last as long, but it was going on, and now it's going on again, and we know they want them here for votes, as your guest himself explained. So it's ridiculous what's going down there.
Yeah, I mean, my point is that it's not the main thing, that most people do what they do because they think it's the right thing to do. And there's a relatively small number of people who are completely cynical. It's just that's not the way human beings work. I don't disagree that the Democrats and the left more generally see this as beneficial to them. And again, it's not just votes, remember, because a lot of these people aren't going to be voting for a long time, if ever. One of the first things it does is that it worsens social problems, increases poverty, increases the number of people without health insurance. And what that means is that the left can say, look at how bad these problems are. Vote for us so we can fix them. In other words, it makes social problems worse that they present themselves as the solution to. It also creates a big new clientele for the welfare state. And the left is the party of the welfare state, and so the more people who need it, need welfare and use welfare, the better it is for them. So I'm not saying that there's no self-interested motivations in the left pushing for unlimited immigration. I'm just saying that there's more to it than that, and that's just not the way people see themselves and think about their own views of the world.
There's another aspect to that too. It regards vaccines. You got these diseases coming back, and you got talking about measles in the news and stuff like that. This gives them an excuse to say, "Hey, we got to make it mandatory to have vaccines." Well, yeah, they imported these unvaccinated people from these third world places into our country, and they're already sick when they get here.
Yeah. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's get one last call in. Steve in Salina, Kansas. You're on the air, Steve.
Mark, I'll have to disagree with you totally on you said the Democrats didn't think this through. The Democrats have thought it way through. They can have permanent power over this thing. That's why they're on this vote thing, and they want the vote. So I'll disagree with you on that. But I will agree with you on this is not sustainable because, as far as immigration goes, they don't want to be sustainable. There is people that are in Congress, a good number of them, that hate America. And you can just see that by what they did to Donald Trump.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm going to say that there's no question that the people on the left who are pushing for unlimited immigration realize that this is going to benefit them politically and financially in various ways. I'm just saying that there's always more to it. You need to put yourself in the head of your political opponents to understand what they're thinking. And they think that they're doing the right thing, that they're being good people by doing this. And, you know, our arguments have to be not just, you know, you're manipulating immigration policy for your own benefit, but we need to argue that, look, this is not good, or maybe more correctly, whom do you think you're doing good for? Who are you rooting for? I'm rooting for the American teenager who can get a job now because the job market is so tight and we're not letting in even more immigrants to loosen the job market, as opposed to rooting for the immigrant, let's say a perfectly normal, good person, maybe, you know, goes to church, takes care of his family, but he's not part of us. And we have a responsibility first to our own people. That's the argument we need to make, not just that you guys on the left are, you know, all in it for yourselves. Even if that's true, that's not true for everybody, and you're not going to persuade people that way.
Mark Krikorian, our guest today, their website, cis.org. Folks, it's a real issue. It's happening at the borders 24/7, and they are writing about it continuously at cis.org. Mark, as always, thanks for being available and sharing your thoughts with us here in Crosstalk.
Anytime. Thank you.
And folks, thanks for tuning in here today on this another critical issue on Crosstalk. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.